It's Nightside Time. You are listening to WGN Radio with Dr. John Duffy and myself, Paul Farvar. This is Nightside. Thank you for joining us. Dr. John and I are going to be talking about relationships. We're going to be welcoming calls. If you have questions, Dr. John Duffy is a relationship expert therapist with 25 years of experience, and I am not, but I do have some experience in that regard.
You do. And before we start, let's just note that recently we learned that George H.W. Bush passed away at age 94 tonight.
Yeah.
And I feel sad about it. I don't know how you feel about
it. I do, too. I just learned about it as well. He was like the last of a breed of politicians who were civil and fair.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. That was a period where I think we could work across the aisle, and I think he had friends who were Democrats who were pretty liberal, and it's a sad time.
It is a sad time. Yeah. I was a big fan. I was a kid. I was always involved in politics, even when I was in third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade. I loved him. I had a picture of him on my wall in eighth grade. I thought like he was the greatest. And yeah, he'll be missed.
He will be missed.
But, if you want to talk about that, give us a call as well, 312-981-7200, or text us. But we are more going to delve into the issues which we are brought here to do, which is to talk about relationships. We are first going to talk about first of all, we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff. I don't know how we're going to do this, Dr. John.
It's a big, big show tonight, right? Because we got a lot of relationship stuff to cover.
Yes.
We've got a special guest coming up. And we've got some other things to cover about our lives that we need to touch on. I've got some particular questions for you later.
Yes. And we do we have some stuff we're going to talk about, dating, of course, and relationships. Mostly we'll talk about first date spots, where you should go for a first date,
right?
And the third date rule, is that still a thing? People say having sex on the third date, that's where people used to wait for it,
right?
When to have the talk. But the first thing we really got to cover, and we're going to ask for calls, 312-981-7200, is how to keep a relationship fresh, inspiring, and sexy. That's what we're going to start with, right,
tricky,
Dr. John?
Tricky stuff all across the board, right? None of these are easy things to do, and so relationships become stale, uninspired, and unsexy very easily, I think.
I couldn't agree with you more, but I think for me, I feel like I never know what is fresh, what is inspiring, and what is sexy. Well, I think I'm okay with the sexy stuff. That sounded dirty.
That does sound dirty.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure I know exactly what you mean, but it's interesting.
Well, what do you mean by keeping a relationship fresh? For me, I think, and as a career bachelor, I always feel like the hardest part of maintaining a monogamous relationship for somebody in this society, because as you know, I think marriage is an outdated institution. It's a very controversial thing that I say. And I also think that humans are not by nature monogamous.
Right.
So how do you keep something that goes against nature, theoretically or scientifically, and keep it fresh and inspiring?
Yeah.
You should know.
I actually have some thoughts on this because I've been in a relationship for some time, but I get your point that even if you're in a relationship that's going to run its course at some point, you still want to keep it fresh and interesting and inspiring.
Okay.
I think fresh and inspiring are two different things. So
let's get the definitions of what inspiring is first.
Inspiring is, how do you grow and learn from each other? You know what I mean? In other words, how do you inspire one another to be better? And I'm gonna read your mind and suspect that you're going to say, I don't think that happens much in relationships.
Well, I think that you can be inspired by people whether you're in a relationship or you're not. And how is that relevant to keeping a relationship going?
It's part of the cool thing about being in a relationship to me. You know, like my wife married this
guy. So your wife gives like great Martin Luther King-esque speeches and you're like, man, this is going to make our relationship great.
Not exactly, but it does inspire me to be better than I would be otherwise, for sure. I mean, my bar when we got married was pretty low. I had dreams. I wanted to do a radio show one day with Paul Farvar.
That's a lie.
But
we have to stay accurate on the show, Dr.
I never
John.
Knew how I was going to get there. But she actually had this faith in me that, you can do whatever you want. So I started out an accountant, and she really did press, like, you know what? You don't have to do this. We can quit this job. Even if your parents are disappointed, you can quit this job and do something new. And that did change my life.
Okay, but that's also just being supportive. That's also being motivational and supportive. And that's something that any relationship can have, whether you're in a one-on-one monogamous relationship. You can have supportive friends that are, or friends, co-workers that inspire you.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. All right.
So you don't need to be, I'm just playing devil's advocate here. You don't need to, whether that's part of a, I don't see how that's going to keep a relationship going. To me, the biggest hurdle people face, and you should know because you're in the room with people. I learned what that means today.
We're in the room. That's the therapy room.
That's
right.
The therapy room with your patients.
Yes.
I would think that the biggest thing is keeping it alive in the bedroom, and avoiding the drama outside the bedroom. Those are the two things that you need to do to sustain a relationship.
Those are, I would agree, the bottom line requisite things that need to be done to sustain a relationship that people often ignore and then wonder, why did this relationship not work? But the fresh and inspiring part, that's the icing on the cake. That's the good stuff once you've covered the other turf.
312-981-7200. Tell us if you agree or if you have positions that you would take on this fresh and inspiring. To me, you sound like you're selling a like a fast food restaurant. I mean, I just don't understand. So what are the biggest things that you need to do? Give people examples of how to be fresh. Keep it fresh in the relationship.
So when you're in a marriage, normalcy takes over pretty quickly, right? You run into your day-to-day routines. You get up, you go to work, you buy the same stuff at the grocery store, you drive the same car. You probably have the same conversations over and over again. My wife and I did a podcast about this recently, like where we have that thing that couples often have where I'm cold all the time, she's hot all the time, and we feel like we're 1,000 years old because we're having the same stupid talk over and over again that's not interesting at all.
Oh my God, it's scaring me so much right now.
That should scare you. But we did point out, like, you know what? Let's stop doing that and let's talk about something interesting. So we'll date. We'll sit across from each other. And this, I encourage people to do this in any state of a relationship.
So then you just go into a restaurant and have the same conversations?
No, you don't have the same conversation.
You're like, it's warm in here.
Barbar, you are being difficult tonight, man.
It's being cold. All right, we have to take a break.
Yeah.
But if you guys have thoughts on how to keep a relationship fresh, inspiring, and sexy, we didn't even cover the sexy stuff. 312-981-7200. Give us a call or text us. 312-981-7200. More after this break. You're listening to Nightside on WGN with Paul Farvar and Dr. John Duffy.
Yeah.
We are taking your calls, 312-981-7200 and text. We're talking about how to keep a relationship fresh, inspiring, and sexy. And Dr. John was telling us some things that he faces in the room.
Yes.
Look at that. I use the big terms. I'm basically a therapist at this point. Based on my knowledge, I've used in the room twice casually in a sentence.
Your training is coming along nicely.
Yeah, I don't even. I took two classes in psychology in college, so I basically am the same. but yeah, we're how do you keep it? How do you keep a relationship sexy, inspiring, and fresh, especially when you're married?
Right.
I just think that's impossible to do.
Well, we were talking before the break about how to keep a relationship fresh and inspiring, and sex is part of that.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. And a lot of couples that in the room, I am finding that a lot of couples will neglect that in favor of the ordinary in their lives. And it really does. There's enough happening in the emotional bank account between a couple in the room, in the bedroom, where they need that time. They need that connecting time sexually in order to really be able to manage the normal day-to-day stuff.
Well, there's the emotional connection with sex, and then there's just the physical aspect of sex.
Yeah.
And the physical aspect, I would think, for somebody being married is, it hits a strain at some point. And they call it the seven-year itch. Is that something they use in the room?
That is used in the room. I think it was developed in the room, to be honest with you.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah, look at that. It's also a song, but yeah, I would think that that's something that people struggle with in their relationship. I know for me, the times that I've had longer relationships, for me, that's a year, I would say.
Yeah.
That was a big part of it. We started, whether it was compatibility, sexual compatibility, no drama. To me, those are the things that keep a relationship alive. I think, obviously, right. sexual compatibility is important.
Yeah.
And also, just having the inspiring, what you called. To me, that just means there's no drama in the relationship. As long as there's no drama, some people think, but tell me if I'm wrong, I think a lot of people like to keep relationships interesting by creating drama.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if I agree with you that no drama is requisite. I actually think if things are going well, by and large, in a relationship can be pretty resilient to drama. A couple can make it through some pretty dramatic times. And some people, you've probably known people who thrive on drama. And if you get a couple who are of similar inclinations there, that is not the end of the world. To my surprise, I will say, when I started as a therapist, I thought, the drama thing probably won't work for most couples. And I don't think it does for most, but for some, they can make it through with quite a bit of drama.
Tell us what you think. 312-981-7200. I feel that, especially younger relationships, they create things that are, you know, there's real drama, obviously, death, divorce, things like that that I would consider real drama. But then there's other drama where so-and-so talked behind your back or right. something like that, and you're not supporting me on taking my side. Those are things that in relationship are creating drama.
Here's part of the problem with relationships now that are starting now. Is our bar for drama, or what I call crisis, is lowering. So we feel like we're in crisis more of the time than we actually are. I usually, if I'm talking to a group of people, I'll ask them, how many people have had more than 10 crises in their lives? And if somebody raises their hand, I'll say, you've had exceptionally bad luck
yeah.
in your
life. What's a crisis? I think a lot of younger people call crises that I wouldn't call a crisis.
Exactly. Right. So like a breakup or losing a job or mm-hmm. something. It's a situation. It might be have its share of drama, but it's not a crisis. We have very few of those.
And if you're in a relationship and you've got these crises that develop, whether it's because of the relationship or outside the relationship, I think that's something that that hurts a relationship or affects its ability to sustain a long term.
It definitely can, because people manage these things differently, right? And unless you find a way to accommodate each other's differences, then you're going to run into difficulties for sure.
It sounds like just break up. That's what I would do. Just give up and run away.
I'm afraid the more we talk about this, the more relationships feel like a lot of work. And
it's a lot of work.
But no, I will argue.
Is it worth it? 312-981-7200. What are you going to argue, Dr. John?
I was going to argue that I don't think relationships require a lot of work. I think if your relationship requires actual work, it might not be the right thing. I think it requires attention. I think it requires attending to in order for it to grow, in order to feel inspired, fresh, exciting, sexy, all that stuff. You've got to pay attention to it.
Work versus attention. What's yes. the difference? You're basically trying to – what you're doing is you're trying to substitute a word work, and you're trying to like – simplify it and say, oh, it's just attention. It's no big deal.
But isn't the shifting the way you look at it, doesn't that make a difference? So if you look at it as work, that you're not going to want to do it. And it's going to feel mm-hmm. like the pain in the neck that you don't want.
I see
want
what you're doing.
You know
here.
What I'm saying?
Yeah, you're just changing the word. You're like, no, there's no work here. You just have to pay attention to the lawn. Like, you don't have to go do the lawn.
And if you're, but Paul, if your goal is to make your partner happy, then it shouldn't be work. It shouldn't right. feel like work.
That makes sense. That's a good argument. I disagree with you, but it makes sense.
Well, I'm glad that you enjoy my argument, you think it's sound, and you disagree with it all at once. Yes, that must be legal training. Is that legal
it
training?
It is. It's from my years of experience, over 17 years of legal experience that I no longer use. but we're gonna break here for the news, I think, right? Take a break here. We'll be back here on WGN. Give us a call, 312-981-7200. You are listening to Nightside on WGN with Dr. John Duffy and myself, Paul Farvar. We were talking about relationships, keeping them fresh, inspiring, and sexy. We got some texts we'll get to, but give us a call as well, 312-981-7200. If you've got ideas for how to keep a relationship fresh, inspiring, or sexy, and or sexy,
yeah,
or do you think it's just not worth it? There's so many other options out there.
It's just not going to happen.
Just give up.
Yeah.
Too much work, too much effort. That's what I think. 312-981-7200. We've got an amazing show still lined up. We've just only gotten to the surface. We have Michael Haney coming up, who's going to talk about his interview with Bruce Springsteen, right?
Yes. Yeah. Michael is an editor at Esquire magazine, spent a couple of days with Springsteen and learned some really revealing things about Bruce and his mental illness and wellness. Wow. And his relationships. Really, really cool.
The boss. You know, I once broke up with a girl because she didn't know who Bruce Springsteen was.
That is a sound reason. You and I will not agree on many things. This I will say.
She did not know.
And she had to go.
She had to know. But yeah. I thought it was a generational thing, but then I figured out later she's just an idiot. We're going to talk about why I'm single. People seem to like you and analyzing me and seeing why am I single at my age and
we'll
why
keep
I'm
working on that. We're
so
chip
against
away at that.
Yeah, yeah. And part of that process is going to be a segment we call Purging with Paul, which is I've given Dr. John Duffy a bunch of cards that I had that I kept. I had four boxes of cards and letters that I purged over Thanksgiving, and I kept some of them. I threw away most of them. I'm down to just one box, and I gave you a pile of them.
I've got a bunch of them.
We're going to decide which ones to purge.
Yep.
But 312-981-7200, give us a call, whatever you want to talk about. We are getting a lot of texts about the death of George W. Bush. We talked about that briefly. One of the last great, great diplomats of our time, you know, probably one of the most qualified people to become president.
No doubt.
Was head of the CIA, was a vice president under what people say is one of our greatest presidents. Whatever side you're on, he was definitely one of the most popular.
Absolutely.
Ronald Reagan.
Kind of beloved across the aisle.
We got a lot of texts talking about his diplomacy from 312. President Obama was just with President Bush. Talks about that civility that we talked about. And just several from 312 reminds us that President Bush was in Houston and they spent the entire afternoon together. Mr. Obama told a large audience at Rice University that Bush was responsible for ending the Cold War.
Isn't that
people
amazing?
Say that?
Yeah. How great. I mean, and what a great tribute that Obama got to see him you know, before he passed.
Such a great, great leader. You know, the first time I got to vote was in 1992. And I voted against him. I voted for Bill Clinton. But right before that, when I was a kid, as I said earlier, I was a huge George W. Bush fan. Huge. I had pictures of my wall. Like, people had pictures of Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan. I had pictures of George W. Bush.
You're a political animal.
I've
always loved this stuff.
I was.
Right?
Now I'm like, I don't care anymore.
One thing I've always thought was neat about him. First of all, he's a family man, right? I don't
Absolutely.
Remember much in the way of scandal.
None.
And you know, Clinton, who beat him in the end, became kind of this son-father thing between these two men.
They
right?
were friends.
Yeah.
And actually, when there was a Hurricane Katrina and all those things that happened under Bush Jr., Bush Sr. and Clinton were the ones that were going out there and doing the diplomacy and all that stuff. Such a great, great man.
Well, and it's just cool that those relationships developed across the aisle.
Yes.
The humility of a guy to realize, we're going to do more good coming together than being apart.
Absolutely.
You know, and boy, what a lost art that is.
It's so sad. Even after McCain died, people were like, maybe now people will start being civil. And maybe like for 12 hours they were.
Yeah, we had a minute.
And then it's back. Even today, you know, it's like, it seems like it'll never end because people just won't forgive or forget the last missile that was launched across.
Right. Yeah, nope, you're right.
From the 847, George W. Bush's wife just passed away not even 8 months ago. Rest in peace. Now, that's something that's kind of interesting. How quickly spouses pass away in a relationship and in a marriage when one dies.
It is striking. In particular, in this order, gender wise, you know, so oftentimes a wife will die, and within a year or two, and statistically within a year, a husband will not survive her very well. Whereas women, for whatever reason, seem to outlast men in terms of age wise for often decades. I think the average is well over a decade, whereas the average for men is just a couple of years.
You know, that's interesting. You say that my grandmother outlived my grandfather for years.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. My father died 20 years ago. My mother is still alive and well. And my dad's best friend, his wife died right before my dad, and he was dead about 3 months later.
Ugh.
Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of a curious thing. You wonder what it is about the difference in the genders where women seem to have this ability to kind of survive and reinvent their lives and move on, whereas men seem to not survive the loss of a spouse very well. Wow. Unless they get married. Oddly enough,
if they get married again?
The exception is if they get married again quickly and they get in a relationship very quickly, there seems to be something sustainable there.
See, this is a better argument that you're making for marriage is survival.
There you go, right?
If you start with that, you might sell me on this marriage idea.
Day one, I should have led with survival, right?
Yeah, 312-981-7200. Tell us what your thoughts on. We're getting a lot of texts about some controversial stuff I said. But I'm glad Tom, our engineer, agrees with everything I say off the record. On the record, he has a girlfriend and he's very happy. But off the record, he's always telling me, he's like, man, I wish I was single again. Isn't that?
It's so funny.
Isn't that right, Tom? Look at Tom. Now he's scrambling.
Hold on.
Tom, I thought you agreed with me, man. I for sure, I thought off the air you were.
Sir, I'm Team Duffy on this one. I'm in it for the survival. Listen, I don't have a lot going for me health wise. You know, if a beautiful person that sees me as more than the lump of coal that I am, then more power to them.
You're underselling yourself, but statistically, I recommend marriage. I mean, clearly, that seems to be what keeps somebody going.
We're getting some more texts. 630, hey guys, when I was young and dating, I would tell my friends I'm not looking for someone who will care about me, but rather someone who will care for me.
Wow.
That's kind of relevant to what you were saying.
It's absolutely relevant.
See, that's a good selling point.
It is. It
Who's
is.
Gonna, and that is something I think about. You know, people, and my mom particularly says, like, who's going to take care of you when you get older? You know, you're going to get lonely when you're older. But I keep getting older, and I still feel like, I still have good hair.
As long as you will always have the option if the hair is looking like it is tonight.
The hair is the key to when I decide it's time to sell out and go Team Duffy. Which, for those of you who don't know, Team Duffy is getting married, moving to the suburbs, having 2.5 kids, a house, and what else is the American dream from 1988 when George Bush was elected?
And you're working 40.5 hours a week, and you know, you're making. Well, if it goes back to when George Bush was elected, you're making $21,000 a year.
That's right. Well, we're getting callers and we're getting texts. We're going to get to you guys. So stay on the line if you're calling, and we will get to your text. And you know what? If we're going to give you, we got some tickets to give away to the Laugh Factory. If you guys want to call and tell us how you keep a relationship fresh, inspiring, or sexy, or if you have ideas on our thoughts or our thoughts on our ideas, 312-981-7200. Give us a call. More in a minute on WGN. We are back on the Night Site with Dr. John Duffy and myself, Paul Farivar. We are talking about relationships, keeping it sexy, keeping it inspiring, keeping it fresh, and talking about Team Duffy versus Team Farivar. Team Duffy is get married, sell out. No, I'm just kidding. Get married, have kids, live the American dream. Team Farivar is just wait it out, man.
Wait it out. You still have hair. Is it rent a studio? Rent a studio.
By yourself. Eat Cheetos
eat
late at night.
Cheetos.
Eat ramen and Cheetos. Live in Lincoln Park. where your parents dropped you off 22 years ago.
It's the stereotype show, right?
That's right. We're getting some text. 708 says it's really nobody's business why you're single. You know what? I agree with you, but this is a show where we try to explore why I am single, and I do care. I want to know. I want people to explain to me, especially people as qualified as Dr. John Duffy.
It's kind of fun to think about, like, why you're single, why you're married, why you've made the choices so far in your life that you've had, right? You know,
choices, good or bad. Good, you make them sound like they're bad choices.
I'm not implying that at all.
There's no judgment. It's the question is it healthy? Is it healthy, correct, what you're doing? 312-981-7200. If you've got thoughts, 708 says to me, then I hope your hair falls out tomorrow. That's funny.
Oh, that's just not fair. That's not, and you know, it's not going to happen. Paul has a rich, full head of hair. Trust me on this. It is a work of art, and it's getting him where he wants to go so far.
We have the two greatest hairs on radio or WGN. I take that challenge to anybody that works here, including the producers. We have the two best hairs here at male hairs. 312-981-7200.
I'd look at other stations around town too. I think we're winning.
Okay, we have a phone call here. Joe is calling us. Joe, can you hear us?
Sure. How about now?
We hear you great. Just turn down the radio in the background.
A tad, right? Hey, listen. Hair is a minuscule part of the equation here, and this is a hypothetical question. Okay. I hope it doesn't wind up as being giving up, but I think it will. It might be in Paul's camp.
All right.
This is the era of the 60s, okay? Right. A person, it's a Freudian slip, you know, what is the person that has an insatiable sex drive? What's the word for that?
I think you might be thinking of nymphomaniac.
There you go. Bingo. Okay. All right. So this situation occurred hypothetically in the 60s. A person got a female pregnant, mm-hmm. and you do the right thing, the manly thing as a Catholic, okay? You marry the person. We did. We got along famously.
This is starting to sound less hypothetical, Joe, but go on.
How about that? Your insight is, you know, kind of astute. So we went to college together, had a, you know, good life, if you will. And we're in our mid-70s now, okay?
Yeah.
The sequence of events were we got along, you know, I think rather famously at the offset, okay? Had kid number two. Okay, we evolved to the point where I received a position where I traveled the United States and globally for business, okay? Right. And, you know, was a little bit promiscuous, put it that way, because I was the N-word, apparently, you know. And we evolved to a point where she considers her, this is probably, I don't know, 20 years ago. I'm too old for that. 20 years ago, 65, and I'm still young, you know, in my mind, and we're all young in our mind if we maintain that, and if you keep moving, whatever. Make a long story short, we evolved to the point where separate bedrooms, separate everything else, and there was no regular sexual activity.
Right.
It was oral, her to me, if you will. And I admit, she offered that, gee whiz, that's disgusting, a guy going down there on her, if you will. That was her original standpoint.
Okay, keep it clean, Joe. Yeah. Family show.
Family show.
As bad as we'll get, okay.
Okay.
So we got to the point where oral was, you know, the only thing I experienced. And then that was down to, you know, it used to be once a week.
Where's the hypothetical going here, Joe? We need to get to the question.
Okay. So we're at a point right now.
Okay.
Where it's nothing.
Oh, okay.
Got it.
So, all right. So that's why I started off by saying maybe I'm at the stage of give up. But 75 years old, mm-hmm. married for 50 plus years.
Okay.
I think it's probably give up. I've done that, okay, because I'm a quasi giver, if you will. Craniotomy, heart transplant, blah, blah, blah. A lot of physical things. So that's why I've said to myself, you can excuse this because the amount of time you've spent with this person, you know, backing her up at various hospitals, you know, and so forth and so on, she's got a reason to be, you know, a little hyper or bipolar, if you will, because of all her physical maladies.
So your, you know, question
is the one side of the equation. I can't, you know, I got to say you got to be a caregiver on the one hand, But doggone it, what do I do to satisfy me?
Well, Joe, that's a good question. Dr. Duffy, mm-hmm. what does Joe do here in this hypothetical?
It's a tricky question, Joe. And I can appreciate, first of all, the context, right? I get the kind of the gist of how your relationship is gone. But if you're in the space where your wife needs you for a period of time to take care of her, after all this time together, and it sounds like she stayed with you through some difficult times when you weren't completely loyal to her, it seems like it might be time to give her some space and some time to recover, and then to reevaluate where your relationship is and whether it's something worth holding on to. Otherwise, I think then you're stuck either in an unhappy marriage or at your age where you are, you leave and you start something new. I can't tell if that's what you want to do because I suspect you love your wife. But, so my bias would be to stick it out and to give this a try and give her some space.
And I usually wouldn't agree with Dr. John Duffy here, but on this one, I'm going to agree with you. I think you got to stick it out. You had a good run where you were getting what you wanted, for lack of a better word. And I think that this is one of those times where we both agree together on this episode that team Duffy.
See, we're agrees. With you, Joe.
But we're going to take a break here. WGN, please keep, we got a lot of calls and texts coming. We're going to get to you guys. Please stick it out. 312-981-7200. More in a minute here on WGN. You are listening to some Bruce Springsteen right now on the Night Side with Dr. John Duffy and myself, Paul Farvar. We are getting a lot of texts and from people talking about relationship Team Paul and Team Duffy. I'll read some of these before we got our great, 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 great call. I'm looking excited to hear from Michael Haney.
Very excited here.
But before I do that, I want to just go over some of these texts. Thank you guys for all listening and texting in. From the 708, I can't give any advice as I'm 63, never married, no relationship this century, and not married before that. I'm one of those whose friends scratch their heads and wonder why I'm still single. I wonder too. Peter, hang in there. It's good to be single. You get to watch whatever shows you want, and you don't have to do this work or attention that you keep hearing about, and you can be inspiring all by yourself.
And Peter's living a good life, right?
Amen. Yeah.
And he's no kid.
Yep. We have that. Let's see here. From the 815, it seems interesting that the give up crowd appears to have selfish intentions and the marriage crowd leans towards an unselfish attitude. I'm not satisfied, in quotes, or quote, what's best for me, end quote, over what's best for someone else. Interesting discussion, boys.
Okay.
So how about that? I like that they've described it as such, and the teams have been established.
Clearly,
the lines are drawn, Dr. Duffy.
That's right.
Even though we've agreed, we'll get to some more of your texts and more of your calls too. If you guys have questions, we will answer questions too. 312-981-7200. We have between us 25 years of professional experience.
This is correct.
In the room. But enough about that. We are going to talk right now with Michael Haney.
Hey, man. How are you guys?
Oh, we're great. I feel compelled to give a little background on the man we're talking to.
Yes.
So,
please do.
First of all, this guy is one of the finest writers on earth. Seriously. I have known him virtually my whole life. He introduced me to everything cool. He is my very best friend. And he happens to work as an editor at Esquire magazine, interviewed Bruce Springsteen, and wrote one of the most beautiful pieces I have ever read in any magazine ever. Michael, welcome, man.
Nice to be on. And with an introduction like that, I might as well just hang up.
Yeah, well,
I got nothing else.
Drop the mic and say,
quit while I'm ahead.
Drop the mic and say, that's it for me.
Exactly. No, I'm happy to be here. As John said, known each other our whole lives. So, questions anyone wants to text to me, I can then, and be happy to answer questions about John, or Dr. John, as we call him now.
I did not anticipate that twist, Mr.
The twist.
Haney. But we got to go to break.
Yeah. I would like to know how long he's been this Team Duffy that I hear of, Michael. Was he always like this, or was he used to be a Team Paul Farver?
He's asking
boy,
about
I'm,
it.
I'm just happy to be on the show, guys.
What a true friend. But oh, go ahead.
Michael, by the way, was a single man for most of his adult life, has been married since 2011, Mike?
That's correct, yes, I got. We're talking getting married later, because I haven't heard the whole show tonight, I got married.
That's just a general theme.
Paul is not married, and I am, and so we've kind of we've unwittingly created teams here. But right. What we really want to talk to you about is this piece that you wrote, right. What it was like to, just to be with the man. What was that? What was the experience
Bruce Springsteen.
Like?
How long did you get to meet with him, too? I want to know that.
So, yeah, I met with him. I spent two very lovely just be very honest, special afternoons with him in New York before. Both afternoons were before he went on stage for his show, which is here in New York on Broadway and is actually closing down in a couple weeks. And you'll be able to see it on Netflix. So if you haven't gotten to New York to see it, it's coming to Netflix on December 16th. So it was two afternoons, which were, you know, for someone like myself and many of us, it was a bit of a psych out going into it. But I sort of had to, you know, I got into the professional space, and it was a pretty transformative for me.
How do you get into a professional space when you're sitting in a room for not one but two afternoons with the boss? How do you do that?
I think like anyone, you keep your focus on the work, and I think, but really, in an interview like this, I always think it's less of an interview and more of what I think you strive to do in all our lives, which is be present and sort of be in the moment and really listening to the other person, and whether it's Bruce Springsteen or anyone else in your life. So it was really, I think, focused on the conversation and just. You know, I always, as a journalist, I always tell other young writers when they're coming up, and they always say, like, how do you do an interview? And I always say, go watch the Chris Farley sketch on Saturday Night Live where he interviews
that was cool.
Paul McCartney. It's like, remember when you were in the Beatles? That was awesome. Like, you don't want to be that guy. So.
What I like about your writing, Mike, and I've had the luxury of having read your writing, you know, since you started, is when you talk to somebody famous, you seem to get down to the deepest level of their humanity and really are able to talk to them person to person. And so that fanboy thing doesn't really show up. And right. If it does, you kind of make note of that. And one thing I noticed in this piece in particular is you really focused on Bruce's relationship with his father and then him becoming a father himself. And we focus here on this show on relationships a lot. This is a little complicated, but I'm thinking also about a book you wrote, a memoir about your father. And I was wondering if you felt any connection there with Bruce because of those kind of incomplete, unfulfilled relationships with your fathers.
Yeah, I mean, I felt connection, but I think my experience, you know, my father died when I was very young, as you know, John, and I wrote this book after visiting friends, which was about, you know, he was a newspaper man there in Chicago for the Sun-Times and Tribune, and died under mysterious circumstances. So I sort of lived this life of absence with my father, but his absence was a presence. And, you know, but I think with Bruce, what I sort of zeroed in on, and, you know, when I'd read his book and thought about him, was, you know, he talks about, you know, this growing up in this house of great silence and great darkness, and his father would sit in the kitchen and in silence all night, kind of just drinking and brooding in the darkness. And you know, he talks about how his father really didn't like any of his qualities, which were all the qualities, as he said, that his mother had, which was like kindness and art and poetry, and looking at this sort of, like, his father called him a sissy and all these things that, and he would tell him that, you know, a family is weakness. And so all these things that he, as Bruce told me, he learned early in his life to despise in himself.
Yeah.
And he sort of spent, you know, his whole life trying to then sort of go in search of how to become complete. So it was a very intense conversation, which he revealed that, as he said, he had two breakdowns in his life and spent a large part of his life working through the sort of what he wanted from as he says in the show, you know, his father was his greatest hero, right, and also his biggest foe. And I think, you know, whether that's me or Bruce, but I think most of us in our lives at some point, with at least one or both of our parents, that's just part of the dynamic that has to be worked out. And I think, you know, I think one thing he said which really stuck with me, we talked about this sort of journey that we're all on, and he said, when he spent time with the doctor and talking and thinking about things, he said, you know, what is the point of analysis, and what is the point of thinking about these things? The point is to turn anger into love.
Right.
And, you know, then he sort of linked it up, and he said, then that's really what I try and do in the song as well, is like, once I've taken the anger, it's like, and I think that was, you know, one of those moments when I sat there and thought, like, that's some great wisdom. And to go back to your point, John, I think what I search for in all these interviews is to find, as you said, you're right, the humanity, because we don't, and I think that's what everyone is, whether you're Bruce Springsteen or your brother, you're looking for an authentic connection in a conversation.
Yeah.
And I think, I hope that's what I think you try to inspire with folks.
Michael, we have so many more I have so many questions to ask you about the things you said, but we have to take a break. Can you stay on with us for a little longer?
I'd be delighted to. I'll be here.
We're going
to
take a break here on WGN. You guys, if you have questions, give us a call, 312-981-7200. We're talking about Bruce Springsteen with Michael Haney. You are listening to The Nightside with Dr. John Duffy and myself, Paul Farvar. We are interviewing Michael Haney, who actually got to interview the boss. And Michael, you brought up so many points that I had so many questions, not just as a fan. I'm not going to hit you, but I'm not a therapist, but I've been sitting next to one for a few weeks now. And the question, Michael, you said that it was a very intense conversation that you had with him over these two afternoons. During the conversations, when he's talking about his breakdowns and all these things, did you have to stop the interview and just did he have to compose himself, or was he just talking, you know, like, hey, it's the weather outside?
No, it was a very, the thing about it, you learn about him is he, I think, is probably one of the most considered thinkers I've ever interviewed, and by that I mean, like, I'd ask him a question, and he thinks about his answer, and he gives fully formed, very thoughtful answers. He's a very articulate and introspective thinker. So I think it's, there were a couple moments where he would just really pause and compose himself, and, you know, for the emotion. But I think as well, you know, he doesn't hold anything back. I mean, he lives his life with no veils. And I think one of the most interesting moments in the interview came where we were talking about, how you because much of this show is really about, as he calls it, like, how you become yourself, and that, you know, that he says, I think he's got this very powerful quote where he, in the show, where he, after he said to me, he says, you know, your coming of age has to be earned, and it's not given to anyone, and it takes, you know, you've got to a willingness to confront all of your very fearsome and dangerous elements of your life and your past and your history. He says, you know, it's very difficult. I said, well, do you feel that you've finally gotten to some place in your life that you know who you are? And he says, you know, it's comes and goes. And I said, I just want to, I laughed and I said, I just want to stop you right there because, you know, a lot of fans would read this right now and say, dude, you're Bruce effing Springsteen. Like, what do you mean you don't know who you are?
Right.
And he just laughed and he said, he sort of hung his head down and his chin into his chest. And he laughed and he shook his head and he looked up at me. And he said, well, first of all, Bruce effing Springsteen is a creation. Mm. And he said, even I don't know what it is sometimes, and I have a pretty good handle on it. And he said, this is part of the stuff. He's like, you know, it's a thing. And he said, you know, the real test is that's identity, which is fluid. And he said, like, even at my age, I'm 69, I'm still trying to figure it out. And he says, all I know is anyone who thinks they've got it figured out, they do not have it figured out. And, you know, I think it's, you know, to go back to what John said, I think that's part of what I think the power of the reception that the piece has had is because he's speaking very candidly, and we were so used to our heroes and his bluster and all this stuff, and, you know, no one's ever vulnerable and you got to be macho and all, but here's a guy saying, like, I'm just telling everyone, like, it's not easy. There's days I get up, I'm not sure what I'm doing or who I am or how I'm getting there, but you've got to sort of get up and do that fight every day. But I think his honesty and his vulnerability, I think it's that's what's been really, to see the reaction to the piece on social media, the people really, really responding to that.
You know, that's one thing I wanted to ask you about, Mike. You know, in the broader context of what's going on with celebrities kind of exposing themselves and being far more vulnerable about their suffering different mental illnesses and mental health issues, this feels like a piece that is, like, of the time. Did you get the impression that the last few years since he wrote his autobiography and did this play, to me, this all feels a little, and even your interview with him feels like an extension somehow of the therapy he's been in for, you know, the bulk of his adult life, and we're just all kind of a party to it in a way. Did you get that impression at all?
Yeah, you know, to give some of that context is a great question. Is, you know, like I said, he's 69 and he just turned 69, and he says he started, you know, when he hit 60, it wasn't because he hit 60, but right around the time he was 60, he had his second sort of breakdown, and it lasted about a year or so, and where he said part of it was, and he said, I don't know why, but he said there was a good 3 or 4 months where I cried at anything, and he said I couldn't stop crying, yeah. And I couldn't get out of bed, and I didn't know any. And you know, he said, I finally went to a doctor, and he said, "Listen, we can fix this." And he gave him, you know, prescription for Klonopin, and got him straight down. He said, "You know, got me balanced." And but I think the autobiography and the show has been, I think, you know, an artistic search for him as well as a sort of individual search. But I think, you know, when we talked about that intense, as you said, those emotions, John, and getting to sort of, you know, I said, listen, we've seen, you know, in the last year or two, whether it's Anthony Bourdain or Robin Williams, you know, people who we think are, everything must be great for them, right? And all of a sudden, you just don't know, right? Yeah. And he had this really powerful description of it, because I said, you know, if I read, you know, look at some of the things you said, Bruce, I said, I can be quite honest, I just said, this is a question I was afraid to ask. I said, have you ever considered suicide? And he held the hell up his hand right away. He said, no, I have never done that. He said, but I certainly have been in a bad enough place where I could see why people make that decision.
Yeah.
And he told a very poignant, he was talking about a good friend of his who he's described as almost a son that he mentored. And I know who the first enemy wouldn't talk about. I don't want to name him because we didn't name him in the piece. And he said, Bruce just sat there and shook his head. He said, you know, he said,
you know, you just don't know in those last moments. And he said, someone's in a bad place. And then he said, you know, another night, another way, someone else is there. It might not have happened. And he says, but sometimes, and he said, someone just gets caught out in the rain, and you don't know, and we never know. And he said, that's the sadness of all this stuff, is you don't know why it happens. But he, you know, he recognized what we said about these people. There's the public people, Bourdain, and these people who clearly had struggled with something, and then they didn't know how to reach out for it. And I think that's part of, I think, the importance of the conversation we had in the piece, and you can read it on Esquire.com, is, you know, that he's saying if you're struggling with it, you're not alone, and it's not something that should be isolating you. In fact, you know, it should be, you know, and Bruce also says this in our conversation, that, you know, what he didn't learn until later in his life, until he was in his 40s, was that father of his who was sitting there brooding in the dark kitchen all night, kind of slowly drinking those beers,
right,
was in fact self-medicating, because they didn't find out until his father was well in his 60s, where he was diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic.
Yeah.
And, you know, Bruce said to me, he said, that's hard enough, but what you also learn when that you get that diagnosis of someone you love is it's genetic, and it runs in your, and he's like, I got to watch myself now.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's a very brave stuff for him to put out there. Mm-hmm. And I think when you read it, you realize we're all carrying around these things in us that we think we got to keep secrets. And here's a guy who's sharing it with us.
Yeah, the strength of vulnerability, definitely.
And, yeah, absolutely.
And your the idea of being out in the rain is something I borrowed already from your piece and used in the therapy room. We're gonna take our quick break. Will you stick around for just another minute, Mike?
Absolutely, John.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
You are listening to Nightside with Dr. John Duffy and myself, Paul Farvar. We are talking to Michael Haney, who interviewed the boss, Bruce Springsteen, for Esquire magazine. We will come back. We're going to talk to you, Michael, and after that, we're going to do some more talk for cover the texts and messages you guys have been sending. If you guys want to call in, ask us or ask questions of Michael, 312-981-7200, or ask us questions. We'll get back to the Team Duffy and Team Farvar word. But Michael, we still have some questions for you as two super fans of Bruce Springsteen. Are you still there? Are you still with us, Michael?
I'm still here.
It's like when someone like famous touches someone, like, wait, so can we touch you? Like, it's like, it's like that's a PG-13 question of the answer of what I was going to ask you. But I had a question for you. So as an artist myself, a lot of people that are hesitant about getting therapy, you know, you talked about the anger that he had, and he went through therapy to address the anger, for lack of a better word. Did he ever have a fear that he would lose that drive that's created the creativity if he's, for lack of a better word, healed? Did he talk about that?
No, you know, he never did. I think he's talked about it a little bit, is that he saw no choice, that he had sort of stopped being creative at a certain point because he just was so down, right? And so, in fact, you know, he needed to sort of, it wasn't that he was fearful of, like, oh, I'm going to, you know, I think that's, you know, that sort of view of you've got to be the tortured artist. He didn't want to be the tortured artist. In fact, he was just frozen.
That's a fine line that artists face, where, you know, you have this tortured, where you don't want to get to the line where you're so sad and depressed that you see no bright, you see no future. But then at the same time, if you don't have that anger, you don't have that fire in your belly that's created all this amazing art, whatever it is, whether you're
the
a musician,
edge, right?
The edge,
yeah.
You feel like you lose that edge. And I know from people I've spoken to, and even myself, you know, when I was hesitant to have therapy, I was like, well, I do stand-up comedy, and my therapy is being on stage. I mean, I talk very openly about these things, and I know a lot of musicians are the same way.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, no, it's a good point, and I think it's interesting for Bruce, is, you know, that he he channeled a lot of that sort of frustration and hurt into, like, you know, as they say in the piece, he just kind of made this joyful noise, and he sort of, like, you know, and I think he also said, you know, part of the reason he's even famous for doing those 3-4 hour concerts is he kind of didn't want to be alone, you know. He kind of just wanted, he needed to sort of, that was what he was working through, you know, like getting, you know, I'm going to put all this out there. What I think was, you know, wanting to sort of be seen as an artist. And I think that's one other thing I thought was sort of super interesting that we talked about. I mean, you know, John has written this book about the available parents, and John's talked to me a lot about, you know, how to be there for your kids. And one of the things that, you know, Bruce landed on just as well was he said what he never had from his father, he was not present. And what he learned, what he wanted, he didn't ever want to lose his kids the way his father lost him. So he always made sure with his 3 kids, all, you know, I said, what is your advice to someone who's raising kids right now? He said, just be present. And he said, be fully present. And he kept using that word over and over. And then he even joked. He said, you know, sometimes all you got to do is show up. You get a lot of credit for just showing up. And he said, you know, acknowledging that now his kids are in their 20s. And he said, you know, and now on the rare occasion I do get a question that someone actually does want my opinion, I still get asked, you know. But so I think it's just about, you know, being present and being there for people in your life.
I'm smiling for 2 reasons. First of all, I love that passage in your story, and that story he told, Mike. And I'm kind of, as you're talking about the joyful noise that he kind of converted his pain into, I'm thinking about the first time we saw him when we were kids. And I remember that was kind of the first time in my life I felt like that element of joy, you know, just standing there next to you, like, wow, you know, like life can feel this electric and exciting and joyful. But what I want to ask you about is one thing I think your piece touches on with him that I think is kind of covert is this shifting definition of masculinity. Like he's always kind of been this archetype, even like down to wearing his father's work clothes of the quintessential American male, right? And here now he's showing a different way of being masculine. Do you feel like is there something deliberate about that with the shift in the definition of masculinity? Because clearly he's shifted to a much more vulnerable persona than the guy who's standing on stage with a 15-piece band swinging back and forth with a saxophone player.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, and we had a conversation, obviously, as you just said, there's a lot in the air right now about how do you raise young men in this moment, and what does it mean to be a boy, and how do you sort of transition into manhood, and what are the responsibilities of manhood? And he said, you know, we talked about his 2 sons who are, as I said, both in their 20s. And I said, it must be a lot of conversations around your dinner table these days. And he said, look, I'm Patty and my wife and I are very lucky. We've got fortunately, we have 2 good boys and 2 good men. And I said, well, what are their qualities? What do you think make up a good man today? And he said, you know, first of all, they're sensitive, they're respectful of others. And, you know, he said, and he envies them because he said, I was raised with this 1950s sensibility of manhood, which he had to contend with. And, but he said, you know, his kids are, their attitudes about they're free of a lot of these archetypes that imprisoned him. And I think, you know, he's able to sort of, it was able to raise his sons that way because he was able to sort of work towards evolving what it meant to be a man now.
Yeah.
You know, and as he said, you know, just because you're 40 or 50, you should not stop trying to keep growing and keep evolving, right? So I think that's part of what he really saw is, like, you know, the core is always there, but I think his values and those qualities have to keep evolving.
Michael, that this is so cool. I haven't read the article yet. I'm looking forward to reading it myself. Where can people read it? Where is the information?
You can read it right now on Esquire.com. It's right there. We've got it up and it's available on the newsstands as of Tuesday. You can buy a hard copy. Great cover of Bruce.
Beautiful, sort of beautiful cover.
Him talking about his, I asked him, I said, do you have a code you live by? And this is on the cover and the cover line, because he said, you know, I've never tried to articulate it, and he thought about it. And he said, I'm steadfast, honest, and true. And I thought, you know, as I say in my piece, like, those are pretty good values, and pretty good motto. We need more of that, all of us. You know, not just right now, but all, and to sort of live by that in our lives. It's a good stars to navigate by.
What a great motto for a man. Before we let you go, I just want to point out to folks that Michael is also the author of a best-selling memoir called After Visiting Friends. That is just one of the most beautiful books I have ever read. I strongly, strongly recommend that you stop at a bookstore and pick up the hard copy of Esquire and After Visiting Friends, both with beautiful covers and both with beautiful prose inside. And Michael, we thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Man.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm looking forward to coming back.
Yeah,
thanks for having me.
Looking forward to talking to you again. Love you like a brother. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Michael.
All right,
guys. We'll be back more here on WGN Radio. We are back on the night side with Paul Farvar, myself, and Dr. John Duffy, yourself.
Myself, right.
And Tom writing, giving us the greatest bump music all night until the last one. I do like that song.
It's a guilty pleasure, let's face it.
It was fun, and I love that. Thank you so much, Tom. Sorry I threw you under the bus earlier to try to get you on Team Farvar. It's all in love. It's all from a place of love. And we were talking. We did get a lot of texts of people talking about their relationships and being single and saying it's okay to be single. And in the past, we've talked about why I am single. And look, I'm not anti-relationship. I just don't think that the pressure society puts on people to be in a relationship or questioning why someone decides to be single. You know, Mother Teresa was single.
Mother Teresa was single. I think that we can
I'm
that
doing
we can
God's work
that.
In a lot of ways. So yeah, there's a lot of people who were single and long into life that made a huge impact on society. And maybe that's going to be me.
That's your mission in life. I really think that's where you're headed. Missionary work.
This is. I feel, you know, I talk about relationships. I have my podcast, Singles Only. I just came from my show at Laugh Factory called Drink Day Laugh, where we interact with people telling their dating and relationship stories.
Right.
All in fun. And then I come in here and I get to talk seriously about these same topics with an expert.
It is really interesting how much of your life you spend talking about relationships, right?
It's exhausting. It's exhausting.
But it's telling too, right? This is obviously something you are fixated on to an extent.
Yeah. I think it's something, well, it's my brand, for lack of a better word. But I do talk about it a lot on stage. I talk about it. I interview people on I have this podcast called Singles Only,
right,
where we interview people, and I've learned so much from our guests. We've had over it's like 125 episodes, and Patty Vasquez here from WGN is rides shotgun with me as the voice of reason, the married voice on the show to keep us in line. But we've interviewed 125 single people, and you just hear their stories. And some people are happy being single, some people are not.
Right.
Some people became single, not by their choice.
Right, right.
You know,
sure.
There's other extenuating circumstances that you can't control.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I've been in relationships, and they're great, but I love being single. I really do, a lot of the times.
You know, it's cool. I've listened to a number of your podcasts now, and it is interesting to hear the variety of reasons that people are single, yeah. and that some people seem like markedly uncomfortable, right? I can see that some of your guests want to be in a relationship or want to be married, but listening to you, it does seem like you are truly contented and intent on being single, that yeah. this is a part of your life that you love.
I did have therapy sessions at one point, and I talked to him and I said, you know, how does this end? Like, you know, there's that fear when you get older and you're going to be alone and everybody's gone. I'm already like that, to be honest, because all my friends are married. They have kids. I get all, especially here in Christmas, I get all these Christmas cards with my friends who I used to see every day or every weekend. And now I haven't seen in years
right.
because they went Team Duffy and moved to the suburbs,
yeah.
had 2 to 3 kids, and they don't have time for their old friends.
That's been our norm, right?
That's the norm.
So I always worry about my single friends, whether they're lonely, whether they feel like they want to or should be in a relationship, uh-huh. whether there is a should there. But when you and I talk, I don't get the impression that you've got a should. You seem like if 10 years from now you are a single man who is dating, you'll be happy with that.
I will be happy with that. So long as I have my hair, I think that's all that matters.
I don't think the hair's going anywhere. The hairline's steady.
The 608 says, buy a sheep or a blow-up doll. Well, I don't think I'm there yet.
I don't think you're in that category. I mean, we can appreciate the any constructive thoughts, but I don't think doesn't sound like you need that.
No, I don't think so. I'm pretty happy. But yeah, we were talking about the purging that I did
yeah.
over the holidays. So, you know, what I get to do on Thanksgiving or the holidays when I am alone, because my family is no longer here either. They're out in Florida enjoying their retirement, my parents. So
right.
I spend that time cleaning my house. It's one of the things I look forward to. It makes me feel great. And this year, there were the boxes I had in my closet, which were untouchable. They were letters and cards, because I kept every card I've ever gotten personally to my house. Not the ones from businesses or whatever, but if they came to my apartment, I kept them. I kept them for years, going back to almost sometimes in the 80s, I think.
Why do you think, so this is really fascinating to me.
Sure.
Why do you think you have held on to all of this memorabilia? And most of them are greeting cards, from what I can tell.
I gave you a handful. Hand to God, I kept some of them because I was like, this could be a good bit, or this could be something that we talk about on the air.
Yeah.
I don't know why I kept them. I think that I wanted to have a memory of certain things. I like to reminisce a lot.
Yeah.
I think that's it. And also, honestly, I was part hoarder. My mom's a hoarder.
Huh?
So I think I enveloped that into my own life. But I will say that other than the cards that you have, again, I said earlier, I had 4 boxes, a full shoebox of these cards and letters. And I've narrowed them down to half of one box. And whatever I keep from this purging, we're going to do
little
on
pile
air.
We're going to look at here. Yeah.
And I did. And a lot of things I do keep too are like memories, like, you know, my band's first show at the Double Door, or things that I think are cool. Like I want to keep. I kept all those. And anytime my name was mentioned in the news, whether it was when I was playing tennis or as a musician or working on political campaigns
uh-huh.
or things. So I kept all those as well. You know, I don't have any kids to show them to, so I don't know why, but I think it's cool to keep those things. But the letters, I don't have an answer for. And a lot of them I kept personal ones, though, too. I know that.
And you use the word hoarder, but that suggests anxiety. You sound more sentimental than anxious about this.
Yeah, maybe there's some sentimentality there.
Yeah.
I do think that. And I was a very anxious, I had a lot of anxiety when I was younger. But
did you?
Yeah, I kept a journal when I was 19 years old for about 3 or 4 months, and I read it, and it's fascinating what my brain was like back then.
Oh,
over 20 years ago.
I would love to get into that.
It's insane. If it wasn't my handwriting, I'd be like, I don't know who this person is.
Yeah.
There's things that I say in there that, and it talks about the things that you prioritize when you're so young,
right?
You know,
right?
And that's another thing that goes back to relationships. What if I did get into a serious relationship? Because back then, when I was 20, all I wanted was a serious relationship, a serious girlfriend.
You
what
pictured
if that
American dream, that quintessential ideal?
If I did, my life has changed 4 times significantly, professionally since I was 20 years old.
Right.
And who on earth would be on that journey with me? There's no way if I was in a relationship, that person that I was dating back when I was 21 or 22 would ever last this long.
Can I challenge that gently?
Sure.
So Patty Vasquez was in here the last time we were doing this show, right? And she stopped in and she described her husband. And she said, you know what? He's a unicorn.
So
somehow they have facilitated each other's way of life so that Patty can do her show. And I'm not sure what Steve does, but he does his thing. But there's something about him where he is along for the journey with her.
Right.
Are you sure there isn't a unicorn out there? Because I argued that my wife was one as well.
But Patty had this great journey, and she was always, for the most of that time, she was a stand-up comedian, and everything evolved around her career as a comedian.
Right.
For me, if you take my life, it was like it wasn't a novel. If you take my life, it was a bunch of short stories. There were a bunch of different aspects of my life that created who I am today. So,
right.
But yeah, I don't know. We're not gonna have time to go into the letters this time, which is good because I think we've now had two episodes where we've met and we've teased it enough. It's almost like a thing. But we are getting texts too about this from the 405. There should be no rush. I was 37 before I got married. I don't regret my single life, nor do I regret getting married. I always say, waiting to get married, those are the more successful marriages because you've already established yourself.
I actually agree with that. I think that by and large is true.
We're agreeing too much. This show can't work if we just agree all the time.
Well, okay, let me disagree gently. I don't think you have to wait till you're 37.
I didn't.
I think I was 27 when I got married.
Okay.
But I think you want to be, kind of a fully formed human being. You know, you don't want to feel like I need this person in order to make me complete. That's the fallacy I think a lot of people work on.
And that also fails a lot of relationships, right?
Absolutely.
Look at that ring again.
I know. We're going to have to find some point of disagreement. If only we didn't like Springsteen or one of us.
And we didn't both have the two best hairs in the studio right now, if not all the time.
Maybe here we could have a contest about which of us has the better hair. Maybe that's the way to go.
I think it just varies between us.
It really does. It's week to week. It's a product.
People are going to be talking about, what do you guys talk about on the show? Well, we talk about relationships and our hair a lot. Those are the two things we talk about. But we're going to take a break here on WGN. If you want to text us about our thoughts, so we don't have time for calls anymore, but we're wrapping up here on the night side with Dr. John Duffy and myself, Paul Farivar. More in a break here on WGN. We are almost done here for the night side. My name is Paul Farivar. Dr. John Duffy sitting alongside with me. Dr. John, where can people find out more about you and your amazing work you do for people in the room?
In the room, right, indeed. DrJohnDuffy.com is a pretty good clearinghouse. I am Dr. John Duffy on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
And also, you have a podcast, Better.
Okay. Better Podcast with my wife, Julie.
Yep. Here on WGN?
Here on WGN Plus. Every Wednesday, we come out.
Awesome, awesome. Well,
how about you?
Awesome to see you again. For those of you who want to see me or hear about me, Paul F. Comedy is my website. Paul Farivar Instagram. That's Farahvar. If you message me that you listen to the show tonight, I've got free tickets to my shows at Laugh Factory. I'm there all weekend tomorrow and also at Comedy Clubhouse tomorrow night. And anytime I'm in town, I have tickets to my shows for my fans and friends who support Team Paul. If you're Team Duffy, you pay full price. That's how it works.
Sit in the back of the Laugh Factory, Team Duffy.
You can sit in the back, standing room only, and we will provide you with water, no ice. But that's our